Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. This edition of Radio Curious is dedicated to Gerard Tiger Hill and those who died when Hurricane Katrina destroyed New Orleans in 2005. Our guest is New Orleans artist Alex Santiago, who lived through the hurricane and 11 days later sought protection in the New Orleans Convention Center. In a conversation recorded in his kitchen in New Orleans' 7th Ward, Alex Santiago shared his memories of that awful event with Radio Curious assistant producer Christina Onestad on August 15th, 2012.
All the lights shut down. Everything shut down. And I said, what the heck happened here? So I went out to go look, and everything was dark, bleak, and silent. And everything was just nothing but just this big, giant, hard wind just blowing the heck out of everything. And I said, man, this is crazy. This is crazy. What is a Hurricane Katrina? What is a Hurricane Katrina? And then all of a sudden, this breaking news came on, and this newscaster goes, oh, we just got late news. Well, there's a thing that's being reported that there's a levee break. And I go like, what's a levee? Where's a levee? What is that? I don't know what a levee is. And then they said some other stuff like, oh, wow, you know, the levee's breaking, and there's reports that some of it is about 200 feet wide, and others are saying 200 yards, and I'm going like, yeah, but what is a levee? What is a levee, and where is this levee at, and what does water have to do with it? And then they said, oh, the water's coming in. And I said, the water's coming in where? And then they kept on saying, the water's coming in through the levee. I go, oh, gosh. I couldn't make no sense about nothing there at the time.
Can you describe, now you know, what is the levee's relationship to the city of New Orleans?
It is a protective wall that they built around the most immediate areas where there's water being held away from coming into any specific part of land. And
that's because a good chunk of New Orleans is below sea level, so the sea's actually higher than the city itself. So were you flooded out by the levee break?
Not directly into my house, but all around my house, water was 1 inch all around the four sides of my house. 1 inch more would have come into my house.
So what did you do?
I stayed in my house for 11 days afterwards. I figured that was the best thing after hearing what the news people were saying about danger being all around, with about people getting crazy and chaotic and stealing and breaking in and killing and so on, and shootings.
How did those media reports impact your sense of safety or security in your neighborhood?
They had me very alarmed to a point where I had figured that my life was in the line of danger, that I felt that perhaps I would be find myself in an altercation. Perhaps I felt that they would try to break in my house. People were going pretty crazy about things. I had high alarm about it.
Did you engage in any quote-unquote looting or going into supermarkets for your own security, for food, water?
Yes, I did. I went out and about with a fella, and we went checking out the neighborhood the next day. And yeah, we saw some stores that were being looted and had already been looted. And we got into one store that was already being looted there at the time. So we got in there and we got some cigarettes and we got a bottle of liquor.
So what do you think about using the term looting after the hurricane had hit? Is looting an accurate way to describe?
I had mixed feelings about it. I had to reframe myself of what I thought was looting, and I started to think that that wasn't a form of looting no more. It was more a sense of people's needs that were not being supplied and offered on a regular basis, open market kind of thing. So
you were in your house basically for 11 days. Water almost flooded into your home. Then what happened?
I stayed there 11 days without any sleep. I had to keep my eyes open just because I thought that someone was going to try to break in my house and what. So I stayed 11 days up. Then after that, my food started running real low and my water was real, real low. My food was so low to the point where I had to think that where the water I needed to make it with, I had some soup, so I had to go mix up some dirty water from my toilet basin, and I put a little bit of Ajax to kill some of the microbials in there. So I put a little bit of Ajax, mixed it up with the water, and put it into my soup and ate some of that. And that's what I had left, and then I had thought that that was enough. I wasn't going to survive like that no more. So I decided that the next day I was going to get and to bail out of there, bail out of my house and try to get to somewhere else where I can find some other way of food supply and water. So I decided that about the 11th day I was going to get out of there. So I took myself prepared, got all my belongings that I wanted to take with me, and decided that the morning hour early was going to be my time to bail out. And I did that. And I took some clean clothes and got redressed. And then started walking up the road to try to get across the river by the crossover of the Mississippi Bridge. There I met some other people that had the same idea. And as we approached about one quarter up the bridge, there was quite a little load of MPs that were waiting for us up there. As we got nearby them, they all started shouting out the same things to us, that we couldn't pass by. We had to turn back around and get back down. So it's obvious that we couldn't do that and keep going. So we had to turn back around, and we wound up at that convention center. And that's where I ended up for the next day and a half.
What was it like at the convention center?
It was a chaotic disaster. There I saw hundreds of hundreds of hundreds of hundreds and thousands of people that were like sardines, pressed all together, bunch of them, just like in a busy, all buyout market. Just all sorts of people walking through all sorts of garbage that had been accumulating for days in and days out during the time I was over at my house. And I don't know how many days they were down there about it, but there must have been some good long days that they were down there. They were all bunched up all together, trying to weave themselves through all sorts of other people and all the garbage and trash that they just were throwing everywhere. And some of that trash between them was anything from knee deep all the way up to chest deep. And they were just walking like in chaotic, crazy conditions. Yeah, it was bad.
How did this impact you?
I never saw anything like that. I never imagined to ever see something like that. When I saw that, I said, gee, golly, man. I lived homeless. I've seen a lot. I thought I'd seen it all. When I saw this about these conditions and these humans after this disaster, I said, I hadn't seen nothing yet. When I saw that, I went, wow. I just couldn't understand it. It saddened me a lot. I was like devastated. I was just so disgusted with even my own self. How could we be such humans like that? And then it got worse than that. I started to walk on through all that garbage and smell. And then my eyes just roaming around. And lo and behold, through all the people, I zeroed in on this one guy that was just sitting there on a chair, and I went and thought, oh, there's a guy that's sitting down on a chair. He's not walking around. He must be comfortable. what's he doing that for? So I went over to look, and I couldn't believe it. When I saw him, I saw all kinds of flies flying all over him. And what? And as I got closer, I said, man, it smells. So I got closer, and I looked over his face, and blood was coming out of his nose and his mouth, and he was all bloated up. He was like in the movies, a bloated up, big old chunky fat cow, all bloated up. I couldn't understand what had happened to him. But then I realized that he was a dead man. He was totally dead. He had been there for days. And I asked myself, how long had he been there for days? How can they haven't moved him? How many people have been looking at this guy for all these days, and nobody makes no move to move him or cover him, just take him away, and nobody done nothing? And I asked some people, how come he don't get moved away? And they said, oh, no, everyone's afraid around here right now. They're leaving everything alone like that. The MPs are on crazy rampage, and they're saying that this is a way to teach people to not go get out of line, because they will kill you. And I said, man, this is crazy. That's not even respect. No way. I said, forget it. I'm not going to deal. I'm not going to take that bullshit. The heck with all this freaking MPs and No, it's not right. So I went and I said, no. So I made my decision. I wasn't going to do that. I wasn't going to take that. I wasn't going to leave that man like that. No way. And have all the people look at this man like that. No way. So that's not right.
So what did you do?
So I went and decided to get me a clean blanket. I found a nice clean sky blue, light blue, clean blanket. And I took it. And I said, this blanket, I'm going to cover that man with it. He deserves a good blanket. He deserves a nice, clean, beautiful color blanket, like in heaven. So I said, I want to take this blanket and cover that man. So I said, yeah, here I go. So I was about 20, 30 feet away from him. I said, man, I cannot come close to him and take some deep breaths of him, because his smell is so bad, probably go get in my lungs and kill me. So I took a real good deep breaths, got myself ready, and walked over to him as quickly as I could without losing my breath. And I held my breath, and I shoot all the freaking flies away from him, and I shoot all these freaking big old maggot flies on him and everything. And I start to put the blanket over on top of him and wrapped him up from the behind and tucked him on underneath his butt and his arms and everything. And I covered him nice, and my breath was running down low, and I go, man, I'm running out of breath. I need to finish. And I finally got him finished, and I said, I think I got about 3-4 seconds left of any breath, man. I need to walk off away. So I started walking backwards away, going like, Lord, don't let me lose my breath, because if I breathe one good whiff of him, it's going to enter into my lungs and it'll kill me, man. Lord, please don't let that happen. So I'm going back. I'm going holding my breath, man. I'm turning like dark and blue. So finally I get far away. I couldn't take it anymore. I had to breathe. I said, man, that's it. Hopefully, man, I won't kill me. So I just started breathing, and I left it like that. I said, man, whew, I'm glad I did that, man. That's it for him. He's good. He's good. All right. I said, fine. I turned around and walked through all the trash after that.
What did you do next?
I saw all this trash, and I said, man, what a disgusting thing. All this trash, smelly and sick. It's not good. So I started to see that my leg was trying to gather up trash with it. I said, what am I doing with my leg like that? I guess I'm just trying to help out, huh? I said, man, this will take forever, man. I'll wear my leg out. I can't do that. And then I looked around just a few seconds, and I saw a little baby broom. I said, oh, that's better than my leg. So I grabbed that baby broom and started sweeping. And sure enough, it started working better. But then I looked at the whole big mess of everything there. I said, man, it's going to take me years to do cleanup, right? I said, man, if I only had a bigger broom. And sure enough, this man goes, hey, you want a bigger broom? And I said, yeah. Now, I was really all bust out, tired. I hadn't slept for 11 days. And here I was getting involved in this cleanup project idea of mine. I was dirty, stinking, sweating, bitten, no sleep.
This is Radio Curious, and you're listening to New Orleans artist Alex Santiago describe his experiences when Hurricane Katrina struck New Orleans in August 2005. He's in conversation with Radio Curious assistant producer Christina Onestat. I'm host and producer Barry Vogel.
So you're at the convention center and you're sweeping up garbage all around you. Is anybody helping you? Does anybody offer help?
Maybe an hour later after I started, I had done about 2 hours of time sweeping. This one guy came up to me and said, "Hey, man, who do you work for?" I said, "I don't work for anybody." He says, "Well, what did you do that for?" I go like, "I'm doing it because I need to clean up this place, man. This place is a mess." And then he goes, "Hey, can I help you?" And I was like, "Dang, really?" Yeah. I saw a bunch of people walking right through me like they got nothing better to do except just look at me, throw trash, cuss, drink, whatever, walk through everything, whatever. That's all I saw. And this guy all of a sudden just asked me if he could help me. I said, "Sure, yeah." So like I already had a few other brooms before. I knew where they were. I went and got them. I said, "Here, man, you want to handle this broom?" He goes, "Yeah." And he asked me, what am I doing? What's my plan? I go, "We're gathering all the trash in bunches, okay? And if we need to make 100 bunches, that's what we're going to do. We're going to gather 100 bunches. So we started doing that. And then I said, "Oh, no. I got the idea that we were doing it wrong. We should get all the little bunches and make big bunches out of a lot of little bunches. So then that way there wouldn't be so many, all sorts of bunches, so people can see all sorts of trash still. They could just see one big old lump of trash, all right?" So we thought that that was better, so we started to do that, all right? And then when we was doing that, these ladies came by walking, and there was about 4 or 5 of them, younger ones, and they were saying, "Hey, mister, what you doing? Cleaning up here, just sweeping floor. What you doing that for? Who you work for?" "Nobody." "Why?" And they go like, "Oh, we've been seeing you. We want to know if we can help you." And I said, "Are y'all crazy? Man." I said to myself, "Women asking me this, not the men. No, just women. Besides that one guy." I said, I couldn't believe it. I said, "Yeah, but I ain't got enough." They said, "No, don't worry about that." I go, "Yeah, yes, right. Some of you can go and find blankets because we're going to start putting trash in the blankets and cover the trash. Because in that way, people won't have to look at trash. They'll be looking at big lumps of blankets with trash in it. And it won't be so ugly looking. And that'll be better." Okay? That was the plan. That was plan B, I think, or C by then. And we kept on transitioning from plan A to B to C so that we could make less of an ugly thing be as ugly as it was. So we got to plan C, where we were covering the bunches of gathered trash and covering them over with blankets.
So what made you want to make something that was ugly seem less ugly?
I was initially just blown out from the sight of it when I first got there. And I thought that that was myself in them too. But they were in shock and they couldn't see any other solution other than just to deal with it. But I had a different frame of mind. So I started gathering up trash. So because in that way I thought that it could alleviate people's seeing all this garbage, more and more and more. It's distressful and so on.
So the MPs were there, you know, telling you that, you know, you couldn't cross over the Mississippi Bridge. What were they doing at the convention center?
They were keeping eye about no one getting crazy.
Did they bring any food or water?
A lot of them that at first I saw were doing nothing. There was a load of MPs that were dispersed there to give out food and water.
So nobody helped, no government agency helped with keeping the convention center clean and doing the garbage pickup that you were doing?
No, there was no program that I saw.
So what happened next?
It got to a point where there was correspondence, news people. They started coming in randomly, started asking people different questions and what. They came up to me once and asked me, what was I doing? Who did I belong to? Why was I doing what I was doing? I told them, man, you know what I'm doing? And I had a big old shovel at the time. I go, okay, listen to this, okay? So I got my my shovel of metal, and I tapped it on the cement real gently. And I said, here, come, bring that microphone real close to this metal and the cement. Look, I'm going to tell you what this sound is. Look. You hear that? You hear that? He says, yeah. I go, you hear that? That is the sound of the government. That's how much they're putting into this effort. You know what we're doing here? This is us. Look, this is what we're doing. Watch. This is what we're doing. We're working our asses off. And this effing government's doing nothing. Except holding arms, doing nothing. When they can, and they're doing nothing. That's what I'm doing. That's what we're doing. We're doing it ourselves. Then afterwards, he went away. And then I just got intolerant about everything.
It must have been frustrating, huh?
It was very overwhelming, frustrating. It was just pissing me off a lot. And I just had about the last straw on me. I was so tired. I was so upset, angry. I was so demoralized. So I guess everything just got the best of me. And then among all the people that were just looking at me, I stopped all of a sudden. And then I threw my shovel down, and it just hit the ground. And then they all like got spooked up. And then I said, real loud out, I said, yo, people, I'm not asking for the people that have injuries. I'm not asking for young little children. I'm not asking for women. But I'm asking, and I'm saying for the young men who are able here, young men who are fit to come up, get up, and help us. Help me. Get us together here. Please, I apologize. Please. And they did. They started coming up, getting off their chairs. A few here and a few there. And they started to go and gather trash. And they started to try to go help out. And one came over to me and tried to go get my shovel and my broom away. I said, no. He said, come on, man, come on. I said, no. He said, come on, man, you've been working hard. He said, come on, man, take a break, man, drink some water. I go, all right. Then this big roar came by, and I overheard it, and I said, what's all that? And they all yelled among each other, the buses are coming, the buses are coming. Yeah, people couldn't believe it. 70-seater tour buses line up, hundreds of them coming through, just all lining up, people just rushing towards the buses to get on the first ones they could. And they did. They all was real, like, eager, ready to go so fast, so quick, so good. And the MPs were just marching everybody, gathering everybody. And bus.
Did you get on the bus?
Yes, I did.
Where did you go? Where'd you end up?
I got on one of the buses. It was one of the last of the buses. I didn't really want to get on the bus. I wanted to stay there and make sure I checked all the rooms in the convention center, that I see nobody that was left behind. But MPs found me and said, you got to get out of here. What you doing here? I go, I'm trying to find somebody. Said, that's our job, man. You can go. And then some said, man, you're a good guy. I wish we had more people like you. I said, don't worry about it. He said, get on going. All right. All right. And then I saw all these little dogs that were left behind. It hurt my heart. I said, man, poor little dogs, man. So I started walking. I was being escorted to one of the last of the buses. I got onto my bus. I was only one person in a bus, a 60, 70-seater bus, and I was the only passenger. They took me.
Where?
All the way to Shreveport. Then from Shreveport, we kept on traveling. We made about 20, 15 stops. And then they took me to Arkansas, in an old camp out there.
They drove you to Arkansas?
Yeah, drove me all the way to Arkansas to a camp out in the woods. When I got there, I was so distressed still. And hadn't showered, hadn't slept.
What was the camp like?
A regular camp, like KOA camp. I think that's what it's called. Straight up regular camp in the wild, Hicks kind of thing, place, whatever. Just regular country.
Was it really like a refugee camp? Is that what people called it?
Yeah, that's what they called it. We was given this this name by the media, and some of us bought into it. It wasn't that we was refugees. We was actually people who were being evacuated. That's what we were. We were evacuees. So many of us were being rescued out. That's what we were. We were not refugees.
What is it like to be back?
It's good, bad, and ugly. And
how is it good? How is it bad? And how is it ugly?
It's the good is that there's great food. It's not too expensive. Housing is very economical if you look for it. People are pretty nice in general. The weather is great during certain times of the year. Lots of festivals.
What's bad?
Bad is when you see people who are homeless because they don't got no skills. No one's treating them good because they're either black or poor.
And what's ugly?
Ugly is when you hear actual gunshots.
Well, Alex, thanks for being with us on Radio Curious. I have last questions that we ask everyone that we interview. What would you like to do with the rest of your one precious life?
Live it day by day.
And is there a book you've read recently that you could recommend?
I love it. I love the book. It helped me from jumping into the Mississippi River one day. It's called A Better World by Eckhart Tolle. Wonderful, beautiful, strong, powerful.
All right, Alex, thanks for being with us on Radio Curious.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Alex Santiago is an artist in New Orleans who lived through Hurricane Katrina in 2005 and sought protection in the New Orleans Convention Center. The book he recommends is A Better World by Eckhart Tolle. This program was recorded on August 15th, 2012. Over 400 Radio Curious programs may be found on our website, radiocurious.org. They're free as my gift to you. I hope you enjoy them. The phone is 707-462-6541. And email is curious@radiocurious.org. Christina Onnestad is our assistant producer. I'm host and producer Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.